From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Jennifer Mitchell, bringing you the news on this day in Maine for Monday, October 30th, 2017. And on this day, hundreds of thousands of Mainers are without power following a windstorm that ripped through the region. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
Our top story, of course, the storm, which has left lots of folks without power. With utility crews still working to de-energize lines, it could be days before many see their power restored. Fred Bever has this update.
Portland resident Kevin Walsh woke at about 5 a.m. to the sound of a loud boom.
And I thought it was just like a transformer exploding or a power line. I come out and there's a tree on top of my car.
His Toyota SUV looked like a smashed pumpkin.
I can't believe the wind was that strong to uproot a tree and put it onto my car. So now I'm trying to figure out how to get this tree off my car.
The National Weather Service reported wind gusts nearing 70 miles an hour during the height of the storm. In its aftermath, on the city's Munjoy Hill, cars and pedestrians had to wend their way around police tape every few blocks to mark off hazards, including downed trees and live wires. Linda Bancroft lives on the hill.
It was pretty significant. It was made my house shake. Yeah, so it was I don't remember ever seeing it this bad. So, but thankfully, it'll be all restored soon.
Just how soon was an open question. Central Maine Power spokeswoman Gail Rice says work crews were focusing first on de-energizing live wires.
Our main focus today, Monday, is on making downed lines safe. We need to make sure that those lines don't pose a danger to first responders or the general public or to our own employees. We will be out there 24/7 around the clock until we complete restoration, but at this point, we don't have an estimate for when restoration will be completed.
Rice says more than 400,000 CMP customers lost power. That's more than in the infamous ice storm of 1998.
The good news is that the storm has moved through quickly. We'll have better conditions for restoration. I think it should go much quicker than what happened in 1998.
York County Chief Deputy Sheriff Thomas Barron says damage in his neck of the woods was widespread, with 80% of some towns losing power. Road crews were forced to improvise.
A lot of highway departments are putting plows on their trucks, just kind of plowing the debris off the roadway as long as it's not connected with any power line.
And while the worst damage appears to have been in southern Maine, other parts of the state were not spared. Emera reported about 90,000 customers lost power in the greater Bangor area, as well as eastern Maine. A spokesperson for Emera says it could take 2 or 3 days to restore power to customers who live in rural parts of the state. Back in Portland, Assistant Fire Chief Keith Gautreau says his department fielded hundreds of calls and it was taking a while to clear them. In addition to the downed trees, he says his crews also had to respond to a fire in a residential neighborhood on Casco Bay.
Right off of the water there, 3 telephone poles went into 3 buildings. The wires went right in and caused one of them to catch fire.
Fortunately, he says, there were no injuries or fatalities in Portland or around the state. There was plenty of property damage, however. In Belfast, several boats broke from their moorings, and at Falmouth Town Landing, the police boat's dock got loose and floated away. Meanwhile, utility and road crews will be using chainsaws and other equipment to clear roads throughout the night. To aid the effort, Governor Paul LePage has made an emergency proclamation lifting limits on work hours for utility vehicle drivers. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Well, despite all that, the state's largest hospital is still up and running, but Maine Medical Center isn't completely immune from power outages either. Patty White reports on how the hospital avoids being sidelined by extreme weather.
At any given time, Maine Medical Center cares for hundreds of patients, from moms giving birth to patients who need surgery to those with emergency health problems.
Today, for instance, we have about 500 patients that are in the hospital right now.
Losing power is not an option, says spokeswoman Caroline Cornish. To guard against power outages, Maine Medical Center has four generators. And these are not your average home-sized generators. They're about twice as tall as an average adult.
And then in terms of its length, we're probably talking a good 15, 20 feet long there. It's a sizable generator. And that's, again, one of four that we have here as backup power at the hospital.
Which are tested once a month to make sure they're ready to fire up at a moment's notice. As for human power, Cornish says hospital leaders meet before each storm to determine specific needs, including whether temporary housing is needed for clinical staff so they can make it into work.
And then we have an alert system, so if we do find that some people aren't able to get here for whatever reason, we're able to call in adequate staff, because the important thing for us is patient safety.
The hospital makes plenty of contingency plans, says Cornish, because if there's one thing you can count on in Maine, it's extreme weather. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
In other news, the Maine Ethics Commission has unanimously rejected a request to postpone tomorrow's hearing on its investigation into the funding sources of the Question One casino campaign. The request came from the attorneys representing the people and entities bankrolling the campaign, who argue that the hearing could influence the outcome of next week's statewide vote. Steve Missler has more.
The Ethics Commission is looking into the campaign's array of domestic and offshore funding and why those sources were hidden for more than a year. It could rule on some of the findings from the probe on Tuesday. On Sunday night, several of the attorneys defending the campaign's donors tried to head off that hearing. Attorney Bruce Merrill made his case during a conference call with the Ethics Commission.
One would have to be blind to deny that the Question One initiative has devolved into a media circus.
Merrill is representing Miami resident Lisa Scott, who was expected to attend the hearing. She appeared as the only donor to the multi-million-dollar campaign, until new disclosures filed in April revealed a complex array of domestic and offshore funding sources. The network is linked to Lisa Scott's brother, Sean Scott, a casino developer from Saipan with a controversial past. He's also the only person with exclusive rights to the gambling license if voters approve Question One next week. In addition to concerns that the commission hearing could influence the vote, Attorney Merrill also suggested the commission could be viewed as part of a conspiracy by state government to defeat Question One.
And we just think that at this point, there is the appearance that the state government is opposing Question One, which defeats the whole purpose of a citizens' initiative. And for that reason, there would be, at the very least, the appearance of impropriety for this hearing to have to go forward tomorrow on the eve of the election.
A review of its meeting agendas shows the Ethics Commission has met five times in the last 7 years within a week of Election Day, and two times the day before the election. For that reason and others, several commissioners bristled at Merrill's comments. They noted that the commission has delayed its investigation several times to allow Lisa Scott and others to answer subpoenas for bank records and correspondence that they say could help to explain why the donors were hidden for so long. In the end, Richard Nass and his fellow commissioners were not persuaded by the campaign's last-minute appeal.
I mean, there's in the record that we just spent 4 days looking at, there's at least one indication that this group of people is not above doing exactly what's happening now. That's coming in at the last minute to ask for these motions after they've had plenty of time to make them. This is absolutely...
Nass was cut off by Chairwoman Margaret Matheson, who worried her colleague was about to share information only the Ethics Commission has seen. And some of that information could be revealed for the first time during the hearing. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And for Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Monday, October 30th, 2017. Special thanks to Susan Sharon, Keith Shortall, and our digital team. I'm Jennifer Mitchell.